Again, to turn to the book of Luke, chapter 7, book of Luke, chapter 7, we'll read the first 10 verses. We find Matthew's account of this in Matthew chapter 8, verses 5 through verse 13. As we've been doing, we look at all the accounts so we can get a more complete picture of what is happening. But in Luke chapter 7, begin reading with verse 1. Now when he had ended all his sayings in the audience of the people, he entered into Capernaum. So we have the place where this will take place. And a certain centurion's servant, who was dear unto him, that is, dear unto this centurion, this servant was sick, and he was so sick that he was ready to die. And when he, that is the centurion, heard of Jesus, he sent unto him the elders of the Jews, beseeching him that he would come and heal his servant. When they came to Jesus, they besought him instantly, saying that he was worthy for whom he should do this. For he loveth our nation, and he hath built us a synagogue. Then Jesus went with them, and when he was now not far from the house, the centurion sent friends to him, saying unto him, Lord, trouble not thyself, for I am not worthy that thou shouldst enter under my roof. Wherefore neither thought I myself worthy to come unto thee, but say in a word, and my servant shall be healed. For I also am a man set under authority, having under me soldiers, and I say unto one, Go, and he goeth, and to another, Come, and he cometh, and to my servant, Do this, and he doeth it. Jesus heard these things, he marveled at him, and turned him about, and said to the people that followed him, I say unto you, I have not found so great faith, no, not in Israel. And they that were sent returning to the house, found the servant whole that had been sick. Again, last week, we see this is the record of Jesus healing this centurion's servant. We see a centurion was simply someone who was in charge of 100 soldiers. He, of course, was Roman. He was a Gentile. We see three things concerning the servant's condition. We see he was sick, and both Matthew and Luke record that, of course. That is, he was in a very weakened, very unwell condition. We see that he was sick with the palsy, so we know what was wrong with him. He was a paralytic. We do not know to what degree he was paralyzed, but he was definitely paralyzed. We see he suffered greatly. In Matthew's account, Matthew says he was grievously tormented. Tormented would refer to his sufferings and would convey the idea of agony or torture, pain, anguish that the man was in. The word grievously would explain the degree of this man's suffering and conveys the idea that his suffering was very severe. His suffering was very terrible. And so we have his sickness, what is wrong with him. We see that he is suffering. We see the degree of his suffering. And we are told that he was ready to die in Luke chapter 7 and verse 2. That is, unless something happened, this man would die. He could not continue to live in this condition. He was on the verge of death. So that makes his need very urgent. That makes his need very pressing. Then we have we saw that something about the character of the centurion, and though Matthew records that there came unto him, Jesus, a centurion, we learn from Luke's account that the centurion himself personally never approached Christ, but he sent the elders unto Christ first, and they, of course, represented the centurion. So in that sense, the centurion came to Christ. He had those who represented him. And then later on, as Jesus and these elders got closer to the house where the servant was, the centurion sent friends to again represent and to say what he wanted to say. No doubt he instructed them to some degree what to say. But we see that when these elders were sent unto Jesus, they reveal the character of the centurion. They reveal the regard that they had for this centurion. And that tells us about this man's character, what kind of man he was. But these elders were mistaken in the fact that they thought because the centurion was such a good man that he was worthy, that he was deserving, that he somehow merited for Christ to do something. And that, of course, is never true. The elders, they loved this centurion. We see in verse 4, that when they came to Jesus, they besought him. They immediately began to plead. They didn't waste any time. They immediately began to plead. They immediately began to beg Christ, showing that they had great love for this centurion. We don't know what they thought of the centurion's servant, but they perhaps didn't even know him. But they knew the centurion, and they had a love for him, and they besought Christ on his behalf. And there's a lesson here concerning intercessory prayer, the praying for others. If we love somebody, that's what we'll do. We will beseech the Lord on their behalf. And that's what these elders would do. We see that they thought the centurion was worthy of blessing. They said very plainly in verse 4 that he was worthy for whom he should do this. This man deserves for you to perform a miracle. This man deserves for his servant to be healed. This man does not deserve to be suffering like this. This man does not deserve to see his servant suffer like this. This man is worthy of your blessings. And again, that shows how highly they thought of this man, how highly they thought of the goodness of this man. But again, they were mistaken in their conclusions, and does show somewhat of ignorance on their part. We see that they looked at him as a man of love in verse 5, for he loveth our nation. So he was worthy for, or because, he's worthy because he loves us. So there's a degree of selfishness there as well. He's worthy because he's done good things for us. And many times, if you examine people's opinion of others, that's exactly what it's based on, what he or she has done for them. It's really not about the person, it's about them. And but that's something else. We see he loveth our nation. That is, he was a man, though he was a Gentile, he was a man who had exemplified some compassion, some care, and some concern for them. He was a friend to them. He was very kind to them. He was unselfish. And because of all this, he's in their minds, he's worthy. He's worthy of the blessings of Christ. We see in verse 5 that they looked upon, that the centurion was a man of generosity. He loveth our nation, and he hath built us a synagogue. No doubt with his own money, though he was a Gentile by birth, he built this a synagogue for the Jewish people. And so again, they view him as a man of great generosity. And we see then just the opposite is what the centurion thought of himself. And what the centurion thought of himself caused him to draw right conclusions. Again, everything that these elders thought of the centurion, they were all true. That is, with the exception of one thing. He was a man who loved them. He was a man of generosity. All of that, of course, was true. The one thing that was not true was their conclusion, and that is, he's worthy. That was not true. In their mind, that was true, but in the spiritual world, that is so very, very untrue. And we see what the centurion thought of himself. We see he sent these elders to Christ because he didn't think he was worthy himself to come. As Jesus and the elders are approaching the house where the servant would have been, we see in Luke chapter 7 and verse 6, then Jesus went with them, that is, these elders. And as he was now not far from the house, the centurion sent friends to him saying, and they were instructed what to say. And this, of course, expresses the feelings of the centurion. Said, Lord, trouble not thyself. Don't come any further. For I am not worthy. I am not worthy that thou shouldst come or enter under my roof. I am not worthy that you should come into my house. And the reason, and he goes on, he says, wherefore neither thought I worthy to come unto thee. So now he's explaining the reason why he sent the elders. The reason why he sent his friends is because I did not think myself worthy to enter into your presence or for you to enter into my presence. So he felt himself undeserving. He felt himself to be unfit to be in the presence of Christ. And this is why he sent the elders. This is why he sent his friends. So he feels himself unworthy to even bring a request before the Lord. Now the fact that he sent the elders, the fact that he sent his friends, tells me that he obviously thought that the elders were more worthy than he. He obviously thought that his friends were more worthy than he. So here we have the elders and the friends, and they think that the centurion is worthy of the blessings of God. We have the centurion who feels that he himself is unworthy to come into the presence of Christ, so he sends those who no doubt he thought were more worthy to go into the presence of Christ. Again, it takes us back to Philippians chapter 2, the principle there, that we ought to think others better than ourselves. So this centurion felt his own unworthiness. But by sending the elders and by sending the friends, he also was saying that they are more worthy than I. But there are several things we learn from the statements that the elders made, the statements that the friends made, because again, they were speaking on behalf of the centurion. First of all, the centurion had a very high regard for Jesus Christ. He no doubt had heard of Jesus Christ. And he had a very high regard. This high regard is manifested from the fact that he being a centurion, he being an officer in the Roman army, thought himself to be unworthy to enter into the presence of Christ. That shows that he had such a high regard for Christ that resulted in a low regard for himself. He had such a reverence, such an esteem for Jesus Christ. He had such an admiration and appreciation for Christ that he didn't feel worthy himself. So obviously the man knew something about Jesus Christ. We see also that the centurion, of course, had a love and compassion for his servant, which, of course, would not be the norm. It would not be the norm to love your servant. A servant was basically a piece of property, basically a tool. But this master loved his servant, which tells us that, as the scriptures teach, that masters were to treat their servants in a right way, in a godly way, and no doubt this centurion had done that. We see in Luke chapter 7 and verse 2 that the servant was dear unto him. That is, this centurion was considerate of his servant. This centurion had a concern and he had a love for his servant. And his treatment of his servant certainly would have manifested his love for him. But we see most importantly, the centurion was a man who had faith. He had faith. We see again, he had heard of Jesus Christ. And now he hears that this Jesus whom he had heard about has entered into Capernaum, which no doubt is where this Roman centurion was stationed. We see in verse 3, when he heard of Jesus, that is, when he heard that Jesus had entered into Capernaum, no doubt prior to this he had heard other things about Jesus. So when he heard of Jesus, when he heard that Jesus had entered Capernaum, and whatever he had heard before about Jesus Christ, he believed it, whatever it was. And he believed it so much that it caused him to stand in awe of the person of Jesus Christ. He believed it so much that it caused him to himself feel unworthy. So whatever he had heard of Christ prior to Christ coming into Capernaum, whatever he had heard, he believed it. He believed what he heard. Without seeing it, he believed. He was convinced. He was persuaded. And again, this is evidenced from the fact that he would take the trouble to send elders to make a plea to Jesus Christ on his behalf. So his faith, as faith always is, was manifested by his works. He sent people to Christ pleading for his servant. Now, this centurion had a faith that was recognized by Christ. We see that in Matthew 8, verse 10. We also see it in Luke's account in verse 9. When Jesus heard these things, and we'll back go to these things in a minute. When Jesus heard these things, he marveled at him. He marveled at this man. It's always somewhat mysterious to me and at the same time amazing. We see on several occasions Jesus Christ marveling at individuals. That really says a lot. Jesus Christ marveled at him. And he turned him about, now facing the people, and said unto the people that followed him, I say unto you, I have not found so great faith, no, not in Israel, or amongst the Jewish people. This man is a Gentile, and I have not found so great a faith among Jewish people, amongst my own people, that I have found in this man. Now, the statements that the friends made, again, the centurion is getting closer to the house, the centurion sends friends unto Christ. And what these friends told Jesus, speaking on behalf of the centurion, revealed what this centurion believed. Notice verse 8, or verse 7. He said in the latter part of the verse, but say a word, and my servant shall be healed. So he no doubt had heard of the healing power of Jesus Christ, and he believed it. He no doubt had heard that Jesus Christ had healed others just speaking. And he said, Lord, I'm not worthy that you should come into my house, but I still want my servant healed. Just saying a word, and I know it'll be, and my servant shall be healed. Again, that was said with absolute certainty, with absolute conviction, with absolute assurance that all Jesus has to do is speak and it would be done. So he believed in the power of Christ's will. He believed in the power of Christ's word. As you read on in verse 8, we see that he believed that Christ had great authority and influence over everything, including the paralysis that had gripped his servant. In verse 8, he said, for I also am a man. He makes a comparison. Set under authority. He says, I have under me soldiers. And all I have to do is say to one, go, and he goes. That's the authority that I have as a Roman centurion. I say to another, come, and he comes. As a Roman centurion, I have my word carries authority. And I say to my servant, do this. And he doeth it. And what the centurion is saying, he says, my word carries some authority. But I can't heal my servant. But Lord, all you have to do is say to the disease, go, and it'll go. All you have to do is speak, and it's as good as done. He's declaring, again, through his friends, he's declaring his faith. So he believed that Christ was able. He believed in the authority and the influence of Christ. He also believed that Christ was compassionate enough to heal his servant. Then we come to verse 10. And they that were sent, this would be the elders and the friends, returning to the house, found the servant whole that had been sick. He has been healed. The torment is gone. The present danger of death is gone. The man has been made whole. We are not specifically told how Jesus made this man whole. He did not give the man any command. He did not give the man any instruction. Obviously, all Jesus had to do was will it and say it, and it was done. And that's what happened. We're not told what he said. Perhaps he said, paralysis, be gone. It's done. It's gone. And they saw that the man was whole. They found him whole. In other words, once he's been made whole, he no longer lives as a paralytic. And so it is when the Lord does a miraculous work upon an individual. They no longer live. They no longer want to live as they did in the past. This man got out of bed, I believe, went on and performed his normal duties of a servant, and never, ever again did he live as a paralytic. And do you believe for one moment that this man had any desires to go back to lying in that bed paralyzed, ready to die? Do you think he ever thought, well, I just wish I could go back to when I was sick. I just wish I could go back to when I was almost dead. No, that'd be a fool. And yet that's what many do. The Lord has healed me. The Lord has made me whole. But, you know, every now and then I just kind of want to go back. Well, that's insanity. That's absolute craziness. But that's the way some live. But a miracle had been performed in this man's life. And he no doubt now manifested that a miracle had taken place. And the miracle was not due to the worth or the merit of the centurion. It was due to the power of Jesus Christ. Let's look to the Lord.